Thank you for the invitation to present at this symposium. I'll be talking about the feeding attractants for the pest diphritid fruit flies. They're very important agricultural pests worldwide, pests of numerous fruits and vegetables. Just as an introduction to the different groups, mostly I'll be talking about the tropical species. This includes Ceratitis, Spectrocera, Dacus, Anastrepha, and Toxotrypana. But I'll also be adding some information on the temperate species in the Regalidis group. Okay, the diphritid fruit flies, because of their importance, have had a long history and have had a number of different chemical attractants that have been developed and are currently in use. I'd like to start off with an overview of these, kind of compare and contrast some of the different systems, and then move on into their use in trapping as well as in control. And the first group I'll be looking at is the pheromones. Unlike moths, where pheromones have been the predominant tool used for insect detection, this has not been the case. It's not because they don't have pheromones, however. And they could potentially be a very strong tool because many of these are male-produced pheromones. So if they were effective in the field, you'd have the female-targeted trap. The first example I have with the check mark on is work done by Pete Landolt and Bob Heath on the papaya fruit fly pheromone. And this one is the exception as far as effectiveness. It can be used successfully on traps and will bring in both females and males. The Mediterranean fruit fly and Caribbean fruit fly are examples of others that are male-produced pheromones. These work well in flight tunnels. We can document their use. They can be used somewhat in the field, but only low numbers are captured. Some of the questions is, why don't they work as well? Whether it's biology or chemistry. The papaya fruit fly is a single component, so maybe that's why, whereas the other ones are very multi-component and they shift a lot, or is it just in the biology of the insect that it's not as interested? They rely on a number of cues in addition to chemical. These are day-active insects. They're highly visual. And in the mating behavior, there's visual cues, there's auditory cues, and so the chemical cue may not trick the female as well as some of the other systems. We also have an example of a female-produced pheromone. This is for the olive fruit fly, and it also has been successfully used commercially. The problem with it is that it's only used for part of the, it's only active for part of the season based on the biology of the insect. They're only responsive to pheromone at certain times. But there are a few examples out there. The major examples, though, are going to be potentially the feeding attractants. And the first group of this is the unique group for the fruit flies, the parapheromones. These are male-specific attractants. They attract only males and act like a pheromone. However, they're not insect-produced. They're somewhat mystical in why they work. They are presumed to have a botanical origin. And these are the trimedlar, which is highly attractive for medfly males, and methyl eugenol and Keuler, which attracts many Bectrocera and Dacus. So you have specific ones for the different groups. The methyl eugenol and the trimedlar are highly effective. The interesting thing with the methyl eugenol and the Keuler is they also serve as feeding cue, and so the males will feed on this. And there was some presentation in the Wendell Roloff seminar yesterday talking about the botanical origins and the use of these by the Bectrocera. Shelley in Hawaii has demonstrated that access to either feeding on the methyl eugenol and Keuler or just being near the trimedlar does increase the male mating success, and some of these compounds are used as pheromone precursors. And the methyl eugenol specifically has been combined with pesticide and has been a highly effective system for both eradication of new infestations as well as for population suppression, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. There has been use of host-based volatiles. Again, whether these are oviposition cues or feeding cues could go either way. And the predominant example for this is the apple maggot and work by Ron Prokopy. These are used in combination with visual cues. The visual cue is very important. And he demonstrated that you could use a border treatment of these sticky traps with apple volatiles and intercept the flies coming into the field from overwintering site, help for population suppression, or use them within the field. The big area, though, is the food-based attractants, and specifically liquid protein baits. Early on, MacPhail, again, some of these historical references are still great, in the 30s discovered that he was looking at different fermenting sugars or different combinations for baits and realized that it was the ammonia that was coming out of these that were attracting the, in this case it was Anastrapha. Subsequent to that, Steiner looked at a number of different, there was a whole series of tests looking at different proteins. He found that the hydrolyzed tended to be better than the non-hydrolyzed. And all of these flies, the females have a protein requirement. They're slow in maturing, and they need to obtain a lot of protein to develop eggs, and so they have a very strong protein-biased attraction. Over the years, people have looked at a number of different byproducts of commercial operations, basically trying to find the cheapest thing they could that would be effective. Cost is always a factor. And there's been a development of these liquid soups in which they make an aqueous solution of these. They've been very effective for the tropical. They're not as effective for the temperate species. And then the other development was mixing these liquid proteins with pesticide for bait spray applications. And just for people that aren't familiar with them, the traditional one for the Anastrapha is Torula yeast, which is actually a product of the wood or paper processing. It's commercially available and used widely as a pelleted formulation mixed with borax. And in this case, the borax acts as a preservative, and it's added to water. This is a glass MacPhail trap that you see. And again, this was the classic trapping system for a number of these fruit flies. Another liquid protein bait is Nulure. It's actually a product of acid hydrolysis of corn. It was also mixed with borax as a preservative. And as we found, it also increases the pH, which makes it more effective. It's used in traps as aqueous solutions, or it's mixed with malathion and was used for aerial bait sprays. More recently, work out of West Laco, Texas ARS looked at another product, an enzymatic hydrolysis of corn product that goes by various names depending on what's in it. It's been combined with different additives, and it's currently the basis for the spinosad-based success bait spray that's used very widely and has predominantly replaced the Nulure malathion. And then there's a number of other systems that have been tested in different areas. Okay, I'd like to move now to the synthetic food-based lures. When I started my postdoc with Bob Heath, he was challenged with trying to figure out what chemicals were in these lures or in these protein baits were responsible for the actual attractant. The liquid protein baits worked well, but they're not specific. They catch a large number of non-targets, and they're difficult to deploy. Again, said MacPhail had noticed that ammonia was the predominant chemical coming out of these protein baits that was required for the attraction, and there were several formulations available and have been tested for attraction of fruit flies. Here are some of the commercial formulations that are in use. Ammonium acetate, which releases actually both ammonia and acetic acid in a membrane-based formulation that is produced by Sutera under the name BioLure. There's also a solid formulation of ammonium bicarbonate was produced by AgriSense, who is now also part of Sutera. And then there are various containerized systems, either with ammonium bicarbonate or ammonium carbonate, that are also used with traps as an ammonia source. And actually, for some of the Ragalitis and for Bactrocera, the olive fruit fly, they combine the ammonia with some kind of visual cue trap, such as the yellow sticky traps. And these are used for a number of the Ragalitis species, walnut husk fly and blueberry maggot, in addition to apple maggot. However, for most of the tropicals, in tests that were conducted by a number of people, they found that ammonia alone in even a liquid baited trap was not competitive with the protein baited traps. As I said, we did find some combinations, and I just want to reference this book and acknowledge the involvement of IAEA. We had developed some synthetic attractants and tested them in Guatemala and in Florida, but through work with a cooperative research program with IAEA, there was testing in 10 to 13 countries looking at a variety of different synthetic attractants and comparing them for different species and under different conditions. And the outcome of all that is the three component synthetic lure that consisted of ammonium acetate, as I said, by itself was not that effective. With the addition of putrescine and trimethylamine, however, made it very effective for Mediterranean fruit fly, and in all of these countries it was equal to or better than any of the liquid protein baits or alternative versions. Again, this is commercially available through Sutera as the BioLure 3C, and data on this can be found in that document, which is also available over the internet. Okay, the synthetic lure base that we started with was the two component, ammonium acetate and putrescine, and it is actually very effective for a number of the Anostrapha species. Like I said, the addition of trimethylamine made it very specific and very effective for the medfly, but it can be used against these Anostrapha. We found very different, large differences, though, depending on environment and host situation, even within the same country, and so the results are much more variable. Okay, that's the overview of the attractants. What I'd like to move to now is using the feeding attractants for fruit fly control. It is kind of the holy grail of this, is trying to come up with systems, alternatives, and available. The advantage of the feeding attractants, as Pete pointed out in his talk, is that you have a much stronger option for control because now you're targeting females. Some of the work from the IAEA studies showed that the feeding attractants actually had improved early detection in that comparison to the parapheromones, in that early you would catch females in the female targeted traps, which also catch male, but they're 50 to 80% females, well before you would find them in the parapheromone traps. It increased trap sensitivity, again capturing more of the flies out there. The other thing it allowed was the use of mass trapping. They had tried the male annihilation approach with the parapheromones, and it does work under certain situations, but for the most part, it is not. You cannot pull enough males out of there. However, when you're pulling females out of the system, and now you have an effect, potential effect. It's also leading to the potential development of the tifritid targeted bait stations. There's a lot of work going on in Spain where they are actively using mass trapping for medfly suppression. In Europe, they're facing a lot of decreased use of pesticides based on the European Union requirements, and Spain is looking a big way and been very effective in reducing populations to acceptable levels, reducing infestation levels, using three-component lure-baited traps. In this case, they put traps probably every other tree or every third tree baited with the three-component lure. These traps are left dry. I'm showing here, let's see if I've got a, there's the pointer. This is a McPhail-type trap that is currently used for the trapping, the multi-lure trap, and it does use liquid to retain the attracted flies. They use traps, however, that don't have liquid but use some kind of pesticide formulation to keep attracted flies, and they leave the traps out there. They're not servicing the traps and they're not checking them. They're just letting them pull flies throughout the season. But this tifritid trap, let's see, here it is, or the tefri trap produced in Spain is used widely for this. There's also use of the multi-lure traps as well as sticky traps. And the mass trapping is showing to be highly effective, but expensive. Okay, what I'd like to do is talk now about the bait station system. Again, we were introduced to this in a few of the earlier talks. It's considered to be a logical extension of bait sprays. But rather than spraying the pesticide everywhere, you have it localized, it can be removed from the field. It's also an extension of the mass trapping, but without the need to service the traps, reactivate the system. And the idea is that the fly goes to these stations, is killed, and is removed from the system. For female targeted systems, we add the pesticide with sugar. The sugar serves as a feeding cue. There's some disadvantages with this, though, that the rain will wash off the sugar, which would inactivate the station if you're depending on consumption. Okay, work done by Bob Heath in Miami was to develop a wax matrix to protect the sugar as well as the pesticide. And I'll be talking some about this system that we'll just call the wax matrix bait station. The important thing here is it provides a delivery system for the pesticide a feeding stimulant, can be incorporated with an attractant, and also includes a visual cue. Visual cues are very important for fruit flies. You'll find them, you'll see a lot of greens and yellows and oranges. The wax protects the sugar from the environment, provides longevity, and the other advantages, it could be shaped into different varieties. And the idea was to look at, we've got plugs and strips, and the plugs here would be a cylinder or a sphere. Strip might be a leaf mimic. We add ammonia into these. We're not sure yet of the longevity of that system because the visual cue is so strong, we can't always assess it indirectly. And to provide the longevity of the ammonia, we have also incorporated the matrix with the BioLures, which have the membrane-based slow release for the ammonia. Okay, we did studies, had a postdoc, David Midgarten, in Guatemala, and did studies in Florida, field cage, a laboratory to look at efficacy of these systems. And the overall results, they found that they stayed active for at least 60 days. Even under rainy conditions, the materials would move back out to the surface through the wax and could be replenished. The attractant in the plug formulation did remain active for at least 30 days. Tested it with a number of different pesticides, number can be used, and the strips or the cylinders were equally effective. Did get a field trial in Guatemala with the bait station strip, as you can see here. We ran a replicated test. There were five blocks, monitored populations, tried to match population levels. They put out a 50 by 50 grid of the strips, and then the field populations were checked once a week by putting traps out for 2 days. Here's the results of those studies. The brown arrow here indicates when we were able to get the strips in the field. It was a very large experiment. They produced a large number of bait stations to get it out. We had hoped to get it out a little earlier, so the populations were starting to build up. We didn't get in as early jump as we wanted. Coffee is a very good host for medfly. They build up huge populations. So it was, I think, a challenging test, but in the two of the replicates, it worked very well. The gray bars indicate the untreated, and you can see the green with the bait stations, for the most part, were lower in adult numbers. Unfortunately, we replicated, so two of the blocks, we had no differences at all. And then there's the dreaded, where the treated ones had a much higher number. So there's a lot of difficulty in running these tests and trying to get these results assessed and validated, and this is just an example of that, but there were some promising results. We also sent some of these strips down to a cooperator, Dr. Putrella in Argentina, and she compared it to untreated plots versus two types of bait sprays, and here the results were much better. The untreateds had very high levels. There really was no difference between the bait station or the pesticide-treated plots, and she got similar results when she looked at fruit infestation levels. So she was very pleased with the results, and these were in 1-hectare plots. There are a number of other systems. A lot of people are looking at this. This is a very high-need area for fruit fly workers. This is one out of ARS Weslaco, where they're adding the protein baits they use with the success formula and making a gel formulation and housing to protect it from the rain for the Mexican fruit fly. Other approaches have been to use insecticide and sugar, coating it on spheres, yellow or red or orange, or yellow or orange for the tropical Vanostrepha and medfly, red spheres for the olive fruit fly. And in this case, they put an ammonia solid formulation inside the sphere. This one, there's a roof over it to help protect it from the rain. However, these would probably need to be reactivated with sugar, or it could use a contact insecticide and the red visual cue, for example, for the olive fruit fly. Approach by Ron Prokopy was to look at a sugar flower sphere and variations of that. Oscar Laberte at University of Florida had some yellow ones that are Anastrepha targeted, and in this case they ended with a wax and sugar mix up here, the pesticide here, and the idea was as it rained or there was dew formed, it would come out, leach out, and reactivate the surface. There is a new commercial formulation developed by Sutera that is newly available, and it includes a laminated device that's impregnated with the insecticide and has the female targeted lures, and so there'll be some testing of this device. So there are a number of approaches for using these feeding attractants. And just briefly, I want to mention, again, I mentioned IAEA's involvement. They're very supportive of moving this technology forward for use with sterile insect technique for fruit fly suppression. They had a group meeting recently in Mexico in which they brought together a number of people to review the status and the future direction for bait stations. And some of the things that we discussed, there were research, there was a three-day meeting of research presentations and discussions, and some of the recent breakthroughs that we decided that facilitate the development of cost-effective bait stations. These specific female or synthetic female targeted, very powerful attractants have opened this up. Development of long-lasting formulations, we want to leave these systems out there over the field season, 3 to 6 months ideally. Again, the loss of use of either the OP insecticides or even insecticide application. And then the highly successful demonstration of effectiveness for population suppression, as I mentioned, using mass trapping in Spain, or the work in Hawaii on the Bactrocera. There, it's a work through ARS Hilo, as well as University of Hawaii, have evaluated mass trapping using the female targeted food-based attractants in conjunction with the methyl eugenol blocks, and have demonstrated very good suppression and control of a number of the fruit fly pests in Hawaii. We discussed the research needs for future development, and the critical one is the development of evaluation protocols. As I mentioned, probably the most important parameter is going to be the fruit damage, either assessed visually or by rearing out the level of infestation. Because that's the bottom line that you want to achieve. The number of larvae per kilogram or per fruit will provide more information, but may be too intense, too cost ineffective to be practical. Adult trapping is always going to be important, but you shouldn't rely on that as the single factor. In some tests we've run in South Florida, we could demonstrate, for example, we'd get good suppression using the adult trapping numbers, but not see it in the infestation level, and vice versa. In some cases, we had high numbers in the traps, but very low numbers of infestation. But adult trapping is still going to be needed to give you immediate feedback on how well this is working. And they also hope to develop protocols they could use not only for Tephritids, but for all researchers in these areas and with the other orders. We need additional highly effective female-targeted lures. The methyl eugenol for the Bactrocera and the three component for female medflies have the level that we're looking for, but we need this for the other species. Of course, the considerations cost-benefit ratio is going to be the critical factor if it can be actually be used. We need to know the number per hectare. Of course, the more effective the bait station is, the fewer you need. The cheaper the bait station is, the more you could afford to put out. So it's always going to be a balancing system. And of course, it's going to be most effective within an area-wide concept. One of the questions we have is the scale you need to show the proof of concept. We ran some very small-scale tests in a fairly isolated guava field in South Florida, and we had a grid of 5 by 7 trees. We were actually able to demonstrate suppression at that small scale with mass trapping. Versus the large-scale validation tests that will be needed by action agencies. Obviously, you're going to have to combine it with sanitation to remove the fruit fly pressure and to integrate it with the other approaches, such as sterile insect technique. The action agencies are going to have to be involved. They're heavily involved in fruit fly research, so they need to prioritize the target areas and the needs, specific needs. And they really are the only ones that have the personnel and access to sites needed for the large-scale studies. Industry involvement is going to be important because we're going to need commercially available, and so it's got to be something that they can make money on and produce, and they will need to provide these large numbers for the large-scale validation tests. And just finally, the IAEA involvement. I mentioned Rui Pereira organized the meeting in Mexico, and they're very interested in moving this technology forward, and he is serving as the point person for IAEA. They're producing a document from the meeting on ways to encourage development of cost-effective bait stations, and starting with developing a task force including industry researchers, action agency members, and hopefully members from other areas. At the meeting in Mexico, we did have a representative from Australia talking about the fruit-piercing moths in their bait stations approach, and that brought a lot of information. And finally, they want to facilitate bait station development by awarding research contracts. Some of the work we did with them was through research contracts and coordinate any meetings at other fruit fly meetings. And just before I end, just acknowledge participation in lots of different areas of this research by a number of other people. And thank you.
Well, we'll take time away from Mikvos Toth if anybody has any questions for Nancy.
Since he is not here, the next speaker is not here.
So for those of you who weren't here at 8 o'clock, Dr. Toth couldn't make it, so the next presentation is canceled. Okay. So we also could take the opportunity, if anybody's got a question for any of the previous speakers. Yes, Bob?
Actually, this question is for you and Rob.
No, Rob, do you want to take this?
There's no doubt that mass trapping is working extremely well for the better training of fruit flies, maybe in part because it's a good female attraction base. But nevertheless, I think that demonstration leads to development of bait stations. Where do you see in the compendium of your work moving towards management strategy? Is it something you think in the near future, or is it going to be a long way up? I mean, the data you guys are presenting,
Yeah, Bob is asking about the potential for pest management using these the other types of lures that we were talking about earlier. So where we're at essentially, I think, with that is a lot of it has to do with economics and what are the alternatives that are in use and for management of those moths on different crops. And I think it has to do with looking for the niches at this time. So I'm looking at it from, and I think I can speak for Rob, that we're looking for examples to use, for both the development of the technology further and proof of principle, with the expectation that with time those opportunities are going to open up, because we have just nothing but increasing pressure on pesticide use, particularly on vegetable crops, which is where a lot of this plays out. So like one example is greenhouses. We do have examples where some of these insects are problems in a high value crop in an enclosed situation, which looks like a ripe opportunity to do something very clearly. Rob's example, the cucurbits and the melon worm, is another where it's high value and it wouldn't take a lot, I think, to go in and demonstrate.